Where's my mic?
Oh, there it is.
I see everybody came to class prepared today.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 208 for Wednesday, January 20th, 2010. On today's show, Crysis 2 takes New York. We explore the Star Trek Online beta. BioShock 2 DRM announced. Half-Life 2 episode rumor mongering. And Iron Lore rises again. All that and your questions on today's PC Gamer Podcast. I'm your host and PC Gamers Reviews editor, Dan Stapleton, and with me on the show today are intern squad, Prentice Getty.
Hello.
And Eric Belsas.
For the record, 50 degrees is not cold.
and our producer, Andy Bauman.
Yeah, I agree. That's not very cold at all. That's warm.
Everyone out here is complaining.
You can't wear flip-flops comfortably.
Yeah, it's cold. Crocs.
It's outrageous. We have been having some crazy weather for California anyway. We got all kinds of lightning and thunder yesterday, which
that's true.
But you know, you go east of the Rockies and it's no big deal. But out here, everyone freaks out. But and like Prentice was like posting pictures of the rain on Twitter. He was so freaked out.
It was crazy. There was hail,
and Eric was yawning.
Pretty much.
I like it when you guys post about the weather though on Twitter, because then it gives me a good idea of like what's headed. So I'm like, yes, storm. Yes.
Yeah.
Does Utah get all of California's weather leftovers?
This year, I don't want to get into like weather nerdery, because that's like a whole other level of
nerd.
But like this year, the storms have actually been coming more from the southern part of California and up, and it's been like all the storms from you guys have been missing us. But last year we were like directly in the path of the storms that you would get. So I'd be like, oh yes, it's raining. That means snow in like a day.
and I guess yesterday LA got a tornado warning, so you got something coming your way.
Yeah, that's good news.
So games.
Yes, yeah, but there's some harsh weather headed for New York, according to Crysis 2.
That was a great transition.
Oh,
there we go.
Super
thank
segue.
You. See, you have to give me some credit. You're just assuming I was going to ramble on about the weather for the entire show.
Yeah, that was good.
That was good.
But no. Right. But,
does the weather
channel
have a podcast? I'm gonna go look at that.
They have a channel.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, Crysis 2 has been confirmed as being set in New York City, which is a
how is this possible? I see no confirmation of this in your February issue that I'm looking at.
Crytek wouldn't let us talk about it in that issue, but in our upcoming issue we will have, and that's for our April issue, the one dated April, we'll have some new exclusive screenshots that you won't see in the upcoming PlayStation the official magazine, but they have more than we did the last time, but then we're gonna have more than they did, so it's kind of a back and forth. But we're gonna have better screenshots in our upcoming issue. Plus Logan is writing up some stuff that he saw in a demo with Crytek that they were proud of and showing off. All kinds of crazy new stuff about how the gameplay will be different in a ruined urban environment as opposed to the jungle environment that everybody was already kind of sick of from, or not sick of, but they'd already seen in Far Cry.
How are we supposed to judge the fidelity of the graphics if there's no foliage?
Well, there will be some. Do you see the screenshot in the February issue?
Yeah, it's a lot of foliage.
Yeah, see, there is some. Is it foliage or foliage? I think it's foliage.
Foliage.
But yeah, so there will be plenty of stuff because the city's been trashed.
Well, this is probably just the benchmark, huh?
Yeah, so it'll be overgrown. So there'll be plenty of foliage to mix it up. But yeah, so that's coming up. For stuff that we're actually playing now, we've been at least Eric and I have been running around in the Star Trek Online beta, exploring that a little bit. Eric, we haven't talked about it much before now. I'd like to hear what your experience has been like.
Well, I haven't been really heavy into it. I think I just hit level 6.
So you're an ensign, or no, lieutenant rank 6, right?
Because
they're doing some funky leveling stuff in here where you've got like 10 levels per rank, and I guess you're just the ensign for the tutorial, and then you become a lieutenant.
Yep.
Almost immediately. And then then at level 11 you become lieutenant commander and so on. So you're going to be like a level 12 lieutenant commander, and you know, so it's kind of weird. But you're sorry to interrupt.
That's okay. I'm having fun with it. It's Cryptic, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a really cool thing with the space battles. You have phasers on your ship and you have to align yourself so you can try to cross firing arcs. Yeah. So you can fire both your fore and aft phasers and try to take down ship's shields. You can divert power to your aft shields if they're going down, like all those kind of Star Trek cliches, but it works really well. It's a lot of fun.
The combat is pretty close to, it's kind of a cross between Starfleet Command and Bridge Commander, because it takes place in like full three-dimensional movement. Whereas, you know, Starfleet Command was just on a 2D plane, and Bridge Commander was not really the same type of combat. It was close, but it was completely free flying around.
Mm-hmm.
But so you're liking the space combat. What kind of ship do you have right now?
I'm a tactical officer, and mm-hmm. so I've got like a fully loaded. I just switched ships.
Well, when you start out, you get a light cruiser. And so
yeah.
As long as you're a lieutenant, you have a light cruiser, and that is one of three of the presets, which are. Like Miranda class, Centaur class, and I forget what the last one's called. It's something I don't recall actually being in the show.
I've got a Centaur class, but it's cool because like you can take pieces off like the Miranda class and kind of customize your ship.
Right.
It's a lot of fun. The missions are interesting enough. It's not just like go kill 5 space wolves, you know, and bring me their space belts. You've got patrolling asteroid belts for enemy patrols and stuff.
But it is kind of the same thing though, isn't it? Because it's, you know, you have to go kill 5 Klingon patrols, and you're not recovering any you know space belts, but you you know you are you know going out and you know it's hunt and kill missions.
I guess it just feels much more dynamic than your like World of Warcraft grinding.
I think it's just by virtue of the setting, it feels a little bit different.
Yeah, maybe that's
but
I mean, true.
Yeah, but they're all almost exclusively, you know, combat missions where it's like go blow these guys up, and you know, come back, and that's one type of mission anyway. They also have the episode missions. Have you done any of the episodes? They don't really label them as episodes. It's like the parts where you go and fight in the ship, and then you beam down to a planet.
Okay, yeah, and back to the ship. You have the away mission session. Yeah, yeah, I've done, I think, just 2 of those. And I'm not really impressed with the away mission content, I'll admit. It's very generic is kind of the best way I have of putting it. You know, it's the combat feels pretty uninspired and not really that Star Trek-y.
Yeah. And you know, this goes back to the cover story we did on Star Trek Online. We were impressed by the space battles, but not so much by the ground combat. And the ground combat has gotten a little bit better since we first got our taste of it the first hands on. But it's still like you said, it just doesn't feel that Star Trek-y. It has all the visuals of being, you know, Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Although especially as you get into the higher levels and stuff, your uniforms get like you start wearing armor and stuff, and it really looks more like Crisis than Star Trek art design wise in some cases, because you've got like the armor with the little hexagons on it and stuff. It's kind of the problem with you know adapting Star Trek or any like militaristic show or whatever to a game, an MMO in particular, is that you have to create all this loot that you get and all these upgrades you can get for yourself. And the more you have like all this customized stuff, the less it feels like Star Trek, where, you know, you're supposed to have a Starfleet uniform that looks like, and it's called a uniform because everything looks like that. Yeah. So the more customized you get, the less Star Trek-y it feels, which is, you know, kind of unfortunate.
That said, the character creation is really impressive.
Oh yeah, tell me what kind of character you made.
I have an Andorian named Tuvix, and he's got
which one are the Andorians for those who don't know Star Trek?
They're the blue ones with the antenna.
Yeah, they have blue and two antennas sticking out of their forehead.
I still don't know who that is.
Yeah, like, they're not like really a really big popular race. They had more screen time in Enterprise, which nobody watched. So
yeah, they were in the original series some too, but then yeah, they were cut out of the middle three completely, pretty much.
Pretty much.
But yeah, I'm a tactical officer, which basically translates to DPS. I've got like cool retro uniforms because you get to pick from like a lot of different uniforms and insignias for your communicator. So that part's really fun. It really gave me that Star Trek feel. You can make Vulcans and even your own race, which I didn't play around with too much because, I just kind of felt like playing an Andorian, but it's really neat. That's really Star Trek-y to me.
Out of curiosity, why a Voyager reference for your name?
I'm secretly kind of a Voyager nut. I may own all 7 seasons.
I don't think I'm going to talk to you anymore, Eric. But anyway, what do you think is the number one strength of the game so far?
Space battles. I've played some where it's like 4-on-4, and the AI isn't bad when you're playing with AI. And it's just really cool. It looks neat. You actually get tactics involved where you're broadsiding people, trying to cross your firing arcs just right, but stay out of theirs. That's really a blast. That's the part that keeps drawing me back, really. Cause it seems like starting off, at least right now, it does seem a bit slow, but that keeps drawing me back in those giant space battles.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for me, that's, you know, I'll echo that. It's definitely the strong point of the game. I read that they're working on fixing this, but the number one problem I have with it right now is when you are, if you're solo or with a group, especially when you're a group though, because you know, the game scales up to accommodate, you know, larger numbers of players. So they throw a bigger number of Klingons or Gorn at you or whatever. So you're approaching a group of enemy ships, and the first player to get within range of that big group of enemy ships just gets obliterated almost instantly because all the ships target him at once when he comes into range.
Yeah, they draw all the aggro, to use the MMO term.
Right.
Yeah. If you have a really good engineer class, they can sort of draw a lot of fire if they really know what they're doing, it seems. But yeah, I noticed that in the early levels. It seems pretty difficult not to get destroyed in a group.
Right. So, I mean, but basically what I had been doing is to, approach quickly and then just try and cast the aggro just as I'm turning. So just at the apex of my arc there as I'm turning. So I'm already halfway turned around by the time they target me. They have an evasive maneuvers ability you can activate that speeds you up for a few seconds. So I hit that and get the hell out of there. and hopefully my shields hold long enough. Cause I also use an engineering ability that activates, emergency power to shield. So it boosts my shield regen for a little while. So I just try and endure that first, blast for a few seconds, long enough to get my squad mates in there to start drawing some aggro away from me. But yeah, I hope they fix that by the time it goes live, because that's the biggest downer for me. Mm-hmm. On the other hand though, if you do go in and just get killed immediately, there's virtually no penalty.
Yeah, which is a little odd I don't know how that's always so hard, is how much do you punish players? You know, there's the like Eve, which pretty much just deletes you.
Right.
And you know, there's extremes, but right now it's there is almost no penalty except having to wait to respawn.
Yeah. It's like a 10 second respawn limit. And it's like the anti Eve really.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're both base games, but one punishes you as much as it possibly can for dying. Whereas the other punishes you not at all. From one perspective, I can see, you know, why they did that. And I can see some appeal in it because, you know, I don't want to sit out. I don't want to have to like grind back to where I was every time I die. I don't like, you know, if you take a risk and get slapped down, it just disincentivizes you from being adventurous. On the other hand, there is no risk because you're not losing anything.
Yeah. So it doesn't have that challenge that like, oh man, I finally got through this, because it's just like you just keep respawning until you kill things.
And you know what it's like? It's like playing BioShock. You're going up against a big daddy, and you just keep hitting him with the wrench until he dies, and he'll kill you 15 times, but you just come back and keep whacking. If you play it like that, it's not as much fun. I mean, I find that, you know, I enjoy trying to stay alive. So
yeah, I'm with you.
So, but I mean, that's artificial. That's me doing it. I mean, I think what I would rather see, in this kind of thing is, if they give you a bonus, like an experience or equipment or something for not dying. So they don't punish you for dying, but reward you for staying alive. I think it would be a better way to do it.
Yeah. That could work really well, actually. I've never thought of that.
Right. Although, I mean, arguably that you are punishing somebody for dying by not giving them the reward the they would have got by staying alive. But, you know, it's something. I mean, and given the mission structure they have, where you can repeat a lot of these, not all of them, but a lot of them you can repeat as many times as you want. You know, it's like if I went through and, you know, died trying to get the, you know, to the end, it's like, oh, I can just redo it and, you know, play again and not die and get that reward. So, you know, it seems like it would be a good idea. Hopefully somebody from Cryptic is listening and writes that down. or I could go on their angry, angry beta forums. Have you guys checked out any beta forums for any MMO?
No, I try to stay away.
Oh, they're terrifying. Just like every like doomsayer, like it's like going to a convention of people that walk outside supermarkets with signs about how the world's in.
Is it everyone who thinks like they know how to make the game better too? Like, oh, I could do that. Like,
oh yeah,
you guys don't know what you're doing.
I mean, that's true of every game.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah,
yeah, but MMO betas in particular are nasty. But yeah, this. I mean, a lot of them do have a point, and you know, like Eric and I were just saying that like there are a lot of weaknesses to the game. But you know, it could still have some long term appeal. We'll have to wait and see when it launches in February how that works out.
Yeah,
you know, I'm definitely gonna play it.
Oh, me too. I'm really interested in seeing what the end game's gonna be like. You know, what kind of to use a WoW term, like raids, like big ship armada battles should be interesting.
Right. Did you do the Starbase 24 fleet action stuff?
That doesn't sound familiar. No,
it's like a big like battle zone where the Klingons are attacking a Starbase, and you have to go in you have to blow up a bunch of Klingons, basically. So.
Huh? I'll have to take a look. Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Speaking of BioShock, today the 2K announced the DRM that will be included in the game, which is, it's better than BioShock 1. BioShock 1 was notoriously bad.
Yeah. Didn't you get burned by it pretty bad too?
I did.
Yeah.
BioShock 1 only allowed you to activate the game 3 times. You know, it used Secure Realm. It required you to go online and activate, and then after the third one, you were shut out. And then if you wanted to reactivate that game, you had to like take a picture of your box and send that to them. And like,
really?
Like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, all kinds of crazy stuff. So BioShock 2 is an improvement over that. It's the same style of thing. You still have to get online activation, and there is still an install limit, but the install limit has been upped to 15.
Wrong. Actually, we found out after the recording that it is back down to 5 installs only. Dan was telling me over IM. So that is almost nearly as bad as the original, which was like 3 when it first came out. So I think there's a typo on the Steam description or something. So yeah, it's going to be just as problematic, I guess is the right word. So look out for that and don't listen to this part because we were wrong. Okay, bye.
That's pretty generous.
Yeah, that's pretty reasonable. And also with BioShock 1, after about a year, they just removed the activation limit entirely. They had moved it up from 3 to 5 when they got a lot of criticism for that. But after a year, like now, if you can install BioShock as many times as you want. So, you know, this is probably not going to cause a whole lot of people any problems at all with the activation limits. What could still cause problems are, the requiring online activation at all, which generally there's like, at least on the first day, there's almost always problems with that. I mean, there's mm-hmm. just because the activation servers get bombarded by everybody trying to do it at once. And, although I guess Borderlands required online activation, and I guess we didn't hear too many complaints about that. So I don't know. I guess this will probably be a pretty typical launch. But you know, the secure ROM haters will, you know, bash it. You know, has anybody here had any problem with secure ROM in the last 2 years?
No, luckily I've been pretty lucky.
Never.
See, I haven't had problems where like I've activated a game too many times. That's never happened. What I did have happen was a driver error with secure ROM, which was kind of hellish because any game I tried to install with secure ROM, it would try to check and fail.
You ended up just
going in, you know, regedit and just clearing out secure ROM entirely and then reinstalling it, and that worked.
Do you recall what driver was causing a problem with it?
No, some, you know, vague DLL file or something.
Right.
It wasn't an unknown problem. Like, I Googled it, and that's how I figured out how to fix it. But
Do you recall what game that was with?
Boy.
We install so many games, it's hard to keep track.
Yeah, it really is. I'm not sure. I think it might have been Crysis, actually, is when I...
Really?
Crysis was secure ROM, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was what the issue was with. So that was sad, but I got to it eventually.
The thing about secure ROM is that they are constantly updating it and presumably like fixing a lot of these issues. So, and I personally have never encountered one. I certainly feel for all the people who go on, I read on message boards all the time, like people just fuming about secure ROM. It's like this, you know, this thing has totally screwed up my computer. It's just, I mean, for me, there's kind of a disconnect in that I've never experienced it personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, it feels a little bit like they're overreacting, even though I know in that situation I would be livid. But yeah, it's kind of hard to understand what exactly it is that's causing this. Because
did you ever have Star Force problems back in the day?
You know, I didn't have any problems with Star Force either, actually.
Oh, God. I had to pretty much reformat a computer because of Star Force once.
Yeah, I mean, I know people that had problems with Star Force. I guess you're actually the only person, Eric, that I've talked to in, you know, recent memory that's had a problem with Secure ROM.
Guess DRM just hates me or something.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely people out there who just have awful, awful luck with it. But hopefully... You know, hopefully this time Secure ROM has, you know, won't screw over too many people.
Hopefully.
Have you guys ever have decided not to buy a game that you wanted because of DRM?
No. Oh, that's a tough one. Because it always comes down to I just want to play the game. I'll deal with it just to play the game. So I guess I'm part of the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of the same way. It's like, well, is it going to work? Because I really want to play it.
Yeah,
when all those horror stories about Spore came out, I was kind of on the border, but I ended up buying it and it worked just fine. So,
but yeah, there's definitely a lot of people. We posted on our Facebook page today that like these DRM restrictions. And there are a lot of people, or yeah, not a lot of people, but a few people on there saying, you know, I'm just not going to buy it. I refuse to buy anything with Secure ROM. And I doubt it's going to really hurt the sales, you know, the number of people that are complaining about it. But well, there's really no transition for this, but but there was a rumor spread that had Prentice livid yesterday. I guess Game Informer.
I wasn't reported. Livid.
You were beyond words. You were stammering with anger. How could they do this? Game Informer reported a rumor that Half-Life 2 Episode 3 will not come out in 2010. And why was it that made you so angry about this?
Because they don't source anything. There's no, it's just, they said, the quote was something like, they said a source inside told them that don't expect, episode 3 in 2010. And they don't source anyone on that. They don't give a name. They just put it in the rumor section and then it goes to Kotaku or wherever. And then it gets spread all over the internet and like go on any gaming forum, like NeoGAF, Valve forums, everyone's believing this. And there's absolutely no proof, source, or anything for it. And yet, they managed to just make something up, basically.
I mean, Game Informer, I don't think did anything wrong here. I mean, they got a piece of anonymous information that they seem to believe is credible. And, you know, the person may have asked not to have their name printed, and that's okay, because I mean, they say this is a rumor. What bothers me is when other sites pick it up and say, you know, that Half-Life 2 Episode 3 is not coming out in 2010.
Yeah. You know, that, well, that too, but.
Right. That's the problem. And then you get people, you know, reading that and thinking that like Valve has made an announcement, and that's not really cool.
I think I phrased it wrong. I don't think they even like cited like some. I don't even think they quoted somebody. I think they just said it's not coming out in 2010, and then they quoted like Doug Lombardi on like saying that they'll release information when it's time. But they didn't actually quote somebody from Valve anonymously saying that the game won't come out in 2010. I could be wrong, but
Even if they didn't like have a direct quote, like if they say, you know, somebody inside Valve told us that not to expect it in 2010, you know, that's still not necessarily, you know, doing anything wrong. That's, you know, saying this is a rumor. This is not confirmed. You know, as long as you label it as, you know, you tell people what they're getting. You don't say this is confirmed. This is, you know, the official, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's true, but it's just annoying when then you see, yeah, every blog picking it up on the internet for, you know, just hits. And right. Each one steals from each other. So,
well, the problem is the sensationalist headlines. You know,
exactly. Yeah.
Right. So they make people, you know, really kind of think this is official information because it's cited right next to everything else, and is official information in the same way. And you know, who knows? It could turn out to be true. Valve has not shown anything at all on Half-Life 2 Episode 3 in years. So it just doesn't seem to be a priority for them right now. So
yeah, no, I'll agree with that. So,
but is anyone really kind of on the edge of the seat for that anymore? I'm not really. Yeah, I don't really have my hopes too high for to play it.
What?
I mean, it's cool, but you know, I'm not really jonesing for it. You know.
Oh man,
I'm
jonesing for it.
Blasphemy.
No, I'm with you, Dan.
Well, according to you guys, I have 5-1 odds. I'm betting on that horse that it's going to come out in 2010.
do you still hold out hope that it'll be out in 2010, Andy?
I like those odds.
All right.
I'm going to go against the grain.
What Valve has said will come out this year is some more updates for Team Fortress 2, and not only the engineer update. There's supposed to be at least two other content updates of some kind that Robin Walker confirmed to a fan site in an interview recently. It seems like they're still making money off of updating Team Fortress 2, which is very impressive. I mean, it's been out for what, a couple of years now, and they're selling it for $250 on sale, and they're still able to justify supporting it by putting people, you know, devoting people entire like salaried jobs to generate more content for it. That's pretty amazing. How long do you guys think they'll be able to keep that up?
Yeah, that's a good question. Aren't they also accepting submissions for your stuff to show up? And
they are. They do buy if somebody makes a really good map, Valve might buy it and create and turn it into an official map.
Actually, they just created a system on their website where people in using like their hammer tools or modeling tools can design hats or weapons or maps and submit them to them, and Valve will actually review them officially, and you might see them in the game. It's kind of a cool little system they've got, but that game, I mean, still has thousands of servers, and I think Valve's smart to keep supporting it because people keep buying it.
But I mean that, yeah, it's just shocking to me that they're still, you know, making enough money off of it to support it. I mean, I guess it's less shocking with Team Fortress as opposed to like Star Wars Galaxies, which is still going somehow. But I mean, that has like a monthly subscription. So even if you've got like 1,000 people playing for at $15 a month, that's still, you know, some money coming in every month. But I mean, with Team Fortress 2, unless people are buying new stuff, there's no income there.
So. That's a good point. I don't know.
Yeah.
They're floating on cash. They have reserves. They don't.
Speaking, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you can't live on reserves forever. You got to, you know, it's just not good business. They got to have, you know, some kind of income there. So moving on and into other downloadable news, the Dragon Age Return to Ostagar DLC, which was supposed to come out, I guess, last week, has been delayed again. I guess it came out for like a day on Xbox and then was pulled because they found a like some nasty glitches in it.
Yeah.
BioWare put up a note explaining the situation, which basically the gist of it is they found this problem like right at the end of their QA and like after it, you know, went out. And it somehow screwed up, like, I guess it was screwing up save games and messes with all the other systems in the game or some of the other systems in the game. And, you know, that just breaks it. So it, you know, it really amazes me with a game this size, that complexity, that they can tamper with pretty much anything in the game and without bringing the whole house of cards down. Eric, you've played a ton of Dragon Age, right?
Yeah, significant amount, I would say.
if they mess with something in like the economy, like how thoroughly do you think they'd have to? I mean, there's so many variations in that game. How many times do you think they'd have to play through in order to make sure everything is working correctly before they, you know, they can say this is, you know, a solid product?
You know, I'm constantly impressed by people who I could never balance a game this huge, you know. I have a friend who downloaded it. Apparently there was an update for the game in order to download the Xbox, right. The Xbox version of Return to Ostagar. And yeah, it just totally nuked all his saves.
Oh.
Lost all his content. Like, so he can't play Dragon Age till they update it again is basically how, because he can't save or something.
Are they ever going to be able to whatever it's called, his saves, like
recover?
Recover.
You know, I don't know, but obviously something went pretty wrong. And
the stakes are pretty high when meddling with people's Dragon Age saves.
Yeah.
So, you know, every little thing they change affects this giant world they've created. So I'd imagine there's a lot of factors that go into this.
Yeah. I mean, like every time you play through, it's pretty different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So having to, well, I mean, depending on what, you know, the choices you make, right? So, having to test something like that, and how many different paths are there that you have to test before, you know, you can put a you know, stamp on it saying this is good. I mean, it's just a huge task. And BioWare says that they are revising their testing procedures to make sure that, you know, this kind of thing doesn't happen again. But man, I mean, that's just a huge task.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be in their QA team right now.
Or ever.
I suppose, yeah.
Other RPG news. Krait Entertainment, which is a new company that was founded by members of Iron Lore, which was the studio that made Titan Quest and Titan Quest Immortal Throne. And that studio shut down. So I guess they ran into some hard financial times. The studio shut down. A lot of the developers from that group reformed into Krait Entertainment. And a while ago, they said they had secured a deal to the rights to use the Titan Quest engine for a new game. So today they announced, or recently, I'm not sure exactly if it was today or very, very recently. I guess this post is dated January 5th. So, so I guess that's, yeah. Okay. We need to change that. Sorry. So on January 5th, Krait has announced their new game, which is called Grim Dawn. They have a website up called grimdawn.com. Unsurprisingly, fantasy RPG. But you know, that's what they're good at. So that's not a criticism of them. But there are no screenshots up of it yet because it's still very early. But what is very interesting is that they seem to have latched onto an idea that Gabe Newell threw out there, where fans can kind of invest in a game early in order to fund the development. So they have up a contribute section right now where you can pre-order your game like before it's even, you know, really made any progress into development, just based on the idea of it. It's like, you know, I think this is going to be a good game. I'm going to pay now in order to help get the game made. And Gabe Newell's suggestion, really? Yeah. In Gabe Newell's suggestion, the early adopters or early purchasers, would then become kind of investors in the game that could potentially earn some kind of interest based on, you know, if the game is commercially successful. They don't make any promises about that here, but, so what do you guys think? Would you ever buy a game? Like say it's a developer that has a decent track record. You've enjoyed their games in the past. Would you ever put down like $30 or even $50, up to say 2 years in advance?
Wow, that's interesting.
If it was a company I trusted on a game that I would want to see come out, sure.
Mm. Did you play some Titan Quest, right, Prentice?
No, I didn't.
No, who was it I saw playing it? Is that you, Eric?
I don't think you've seen me playing it, but I have played Titan Quest in the past.
Okay. So based on your experience with Titan Quest, would you put down $30 right now to put out a new game from those developers?
Yeah, I would. I think $30 is about my limit though. $50 seems a bit much with no like form of insurance where if they get shut down, you're not getting your money back.
Right. That is definitely a risk.
So,
have you seen, there's a website set up, I forget what it's called, but people post their projects on it and they like, you know, Twitter it out to all their friends and beg for money. And then there's like a fundraising thing. And I know someone who got $5,000 to do a comic book.
Really?
And it's like, I'm one of his best friends and I didn't give him any money. I was like, really, dude? I'm not. So for me to like, I don't know. There's something about the creative process in my mind that almost involves a large amount of good fortune, like things just coming together, that far out in game development to put money on that it's going to be good is just not something that does not sound good to me. But I don't know.
Well,
and also, I don't really know how games are made that well. So,
Andy, you would make a really crappy game publisher.
or a really savvy one.
Right. Well, that's true. But I mean, this is basically having the gamers, you know, fill the role of the publisher the publisher generally does is say, okay, I'm going to pay you to make this game and then I'm going to sell the game. So you know, sometimes there's, you know, some revenue sharing in there depending on the publisher. But yeah, so the publisher puts up the money in advance in order to make the game. So, and that's what they're asking the community to do here.
Yeah. But I mean, would you ever do that? Would you say, yeah, this game, this company can make games. I'm gonna buy one that I haven't seen yet.
I know, I personally am pretty notoriously cheap. It is kind of difficult to get to persuade myself to do something like that. But if it is an idea that for example, if somebody said we're going to remake XCOM, send $30, and I had some confidence that they'd be able to do it, I would send $50.
Well, you have a good idea. Since, you know, you were the previews guy, or wait, were you the previews guy?
Well, I did do previews.
That's
for
right.
A while,
okay. But... So yeah, you were on the previews beat and you've been to a lot of these dudes. You know what it takes to do a game, right? And it's like, for me, I don't really know. To me, it's like magic. You just like throw some crap in a pot and stir it up and out comes a game.
I've been doing this for over 5 years and it's still kind of magic.
Yeah.
But
so, I mean, yeah. So there you go. It's like, there's got to be an amount, because I know for me, when I'm talking about making something, it's never going to be exactly what it was supposed to be. You know what I mean? Like, there's
of course not.
That's just what you learn throughout doing stuff. And I don't know.
Right.
I
mean, you see like concept art, and you talk to developers, and they'll talk about what they wanted to do, but you know had to cut out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It never works out exactly how they planned. And sometimes, you know, it's like, oh, we figured out halfway through that we could do this awesome thing. So, you know, through playing with their tools and the game, they discover some great thing that turns into a new game mechanic. But
I think it would just be a case by case basis on whatever game. So I think if you're a fan, I think fans of a certain, if it was a sequel, then I mean, all the fans of the first one would probably chip in something.
Right.
Well, yeah, okay.
I'm sure when Evan finds out about Grim Dawn, he's a huge Titan Quest fan, but when he finds out about Grim Dawn, I'm sure he will be, opening his wallet for them.
I would have bought Duke Nukem Forever in advance.
Yeah, me too.
Some people did. Of course, all that money went to like GameSpot.
Because
they took all the pre-orders. So I guess last on our list is to talk about today is that Hugo Chavez, the president of Venezuela, is now bad-mouthing games.
Why are we even going to give him the publicity?
Because he's funny. I mean... He's completely irrelevant to any, you know, gaming in the U.S., but most things in the U.S. Except, you know, he's kind of vilified, and you know, he is a bad guy. Lots of human rights abuses human rights abuses I can take, but bad mouthing video games, outrageous. But I mean, the really funny part is that Chavez would like to see Venezuela making educational games instead of Super Murder Simulator 4 and Little Indigenous Dolls.
Is that his quote?
I'm reading off of Joystick here.
Did he really say Super Murder Simulator 4?
That part is not in quotes.
That game sounds awesome.
isn't that Hitman?
Yeah.
Hitman, it always amazes me that people call like Doom and stuff like that murder simulators and totally ignore Hitman because that's exactly what it is, a murder simulator. But anyway. But yeah. That just amused me.
I like the more arcadey murders.
All right, so let's take a few questions.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast. This is Sean from White Bear Lake, Minnesota, and I'm wondering if you guys think the multiplayer mode of Bioshock 2 will be any good. I loved the first game and can't wait for the sequel. Thanks, guys. Love the magazine and the podcast.
That's a good question. I mean, it's hard to say right now. I haven't played any of it yet. You guys haven't yet either, have you?
Nope, just single player.
Yeah. It's kind of too early to say. I mean, a lot of that's going to depend on, you know, last minute tuning and just how the community reacts to it. But, to me, it doesn't matter. If it's good, that's a great bonus, but I'm not picking up Bioshock 2 for the multiplayer.
I'm exactly with you. I might check it out, but it's not going to
I'm not looking forward to it as like my multiplayer game of choice every night.
It'd be a happy surprise if it's nice. But I mean, the great thing about it is the game costs the same amount as the first one, and you get the, you know, similar length single player experience, and multiplayer might be good, you know. And if it is, that's even more value for your money. So, and it's kind of a wait and see thing, but let's hope it turns out well.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast. HBAR 98 here from the land of Southern Illinois, home to, well, right now, a lot of flooded corn and wheat fields. And apparently murderous deer. Seriously, my father-in-law was attacked by a deer. It really hurt. Anyway, on to my question. With a lot of games recently trying to be more edgy or cause more of a stir in order to sell more units, I want to know if there were really any games or gaming tech out there that really was controversial when it first came out, that now we pretty much take for granted as normal today. The first one that comes to my mind is the Steam service, when it required you to have an internet connection in order to play and buy games. So what do you think of that? And as an added challenge, no one gets to mention Custer's Last Stand.
Well, I mean, first of all, I'd recommend getting your father-in-law one of those Deer Hunter games so he can, you know, exact his revenge. But also, well, I guess he lives out there. He's probably a hunter anyway. So he doesn't need the game. So yeah, gaming controversial things in games that are now kind of commonplace. I guess, and aside from like requiring you to be online, the biggest thing that I can remember, that, you know, kind of put people out that really made people change anything about their computers was to, require you to have a 3D accelerator. You know, a 3D hardware in your computer. And, you know, that was only, you know, well, I guess it was like 12 years ago that really started happening. But, that was a big thing. It's like, you had to buy this new part that your computer didn't need before.
And back then it was pretty bad because you had to have a 2D video card in addition to a 3D video card.
That's right.
So it was actually, yeah, kind of controversial because people didn't maybe even have room in their computer.
Yeah, it's like, did you really need it? You know, and like you had to buy a new motherboard that would support it, and all kinds of stuff like that. So that was the biggest thing I can think of. Can you guys think of any others?
Well, there was the whole Aegea Physics cards.
Yeah, but that never really caught on. So and no, now it's,
well, Nvidia just bought them up, really.
Right, and like they probably didn't sell a lot of those physics cards simply because there wasn't enough of a benefit to gamers to justify it. But yeah, and like that's not really the same thing. I guess right now you could make the argument, and Will Smith, well, I guess, who is now the former editor in chief of Maximum PC, he's just recently left to start his own gig, but he really objects to the way that Nvidia is pushing PhysX, because he, you know, he doesn't like the segmenting of the PC gaming population, and he has an excellent point there, because, you know, the PC gaming market is small enough and kind of fractured enough as it is with, you know, all the different hardware vendors and stuff like that. When you start saying, you know, this game will only work on Nvidia hardware, you know, that could cause a problem. And, you know, fortunately, nobody has really done that yet. Nobody's made a physics only game, you know, that requires physics, or at least requires, Nvidia hardware in order to run it on. It's a possibility. And Nvidia, you know, is keeping physics as a closed standard. And that's it's kind of a very minor one relative to the other ones we've talked about, but yeah. I would add DRM to that, except it's not really accepted. It's still very controversial.
Hi, PC Gamer. This is Foxor. I just beat Torchlight. I have a question about it. It's made by the people who made Diablo, and so was Hellgate London, and I think another game that I can't remember. Could you guys go over the lineage of the Diablo 2 developers and what they're up to now?
And that's kind of a complicated question, because it's, you know, there's not just one group, not one like team of guys that stayed together. I mean, several guys, like the lineage for Torchlight, it went, from, from Diablo 1 and 2 were Max and Aaron Eric Schaefer, who then went to Flagship with, you know, Bill Roper and Dave Brevik, I think, and Kenneth Williams, and yeah. So a bunch of those guys left Blizzard North and went to, and formed their, Flagship. Flagship went under after Hellgate, you know, kind of didn't, well, crashed and burned. and then some of those guys went to Runic to basically restart what they had been doing on the side, which was called Mythos. And that became Torchlight. That's one group of guys. There's also Dave Brevik, who was one of the key guys in Diablo. He's now at Gazillion Entertainment. They're doing like the Lego MMO, and I guess they're starting on a Marvel project. There are a bunch of guys, and it's kind of funny to see like all of these developers claiming, you know, from the makers of Diablo, when, you know, they got like, you know, a couple of guys that worked on one of the Diablo games. With Torchlight in particular, it does have a pretty strong connection to Diablo, because Max and Eric Schaefer were some of the initial designers on Diablo.
Hello, PC Gamer staff. Roger here in Ohio, and I got a quick question. I got $50 of birthday money that I want to spend on a new game, and I've narrowed it down to Mass Effect 2 or Bioshock 2. And I played both the originals and loved them both, and with maybe a slight edge to Bioshock. So if you had that $50 and you could only buy one of those two, which game would you buy? Just want to get your thoughts. Long-time listener, long-time subscriber. Love the magazine, and I really love you guys, too. Have a great day.
That is an excellent question. those are both excellent games. I honestly, I would say you cannot go wrong. If you're, and you know, the nice thing is that, you know, it's the other one, whichever one you don't get isn't going to go away. You're not going to miss your opportunity to play it.
Heck, you might even get it on sale on Steam later.
Right. You'll probably get a deal on it later, long term, you don't have to make that choice. I would say, well, I guess there's some considerations to make. I guess Mass Effect is going to be the longer experience. You'll probably get around 30 hours from one playthrough. A little shorter if you really rush. Bioshock, it kind of depends on the multiplayer, how long you're going to get out of that, but it's probably going to be, and the single player is probably going to be less than 20 hours, right? So if you're just looking for time spent with the game, Mass Effect is the way to go. If you prefer the setting and storytelling of, and, you know, kind of more linear storytelling of, Bioshock, then, you know, that's good too. It's honestly really hard to make a call either way. I would personally just say, you know, if your inclination is Bioshock, go with Bioshock. What do you guys think? Tell us which one you would spend your money on.
Here's the thing. I really think Mass Effect 2 is the most, I don't want to like make it sound over the top, but it's so important, I think. I hate to put down Bioshock 2, because I really did like Bioshock 1, but Bioshock 2 has a lot of, like, why does it exist going against it? I hate to, like, put that out there, but I kind of feel the same way. I'm like, it's not necessary. It's not, the guys who created and nurtured Bioshock aren't necessarily the ones who said, let's keep going and do more. So, to me, that has, like, a little bit of a negativity toward it. Not to say it's not going to be a good game, though, because it probably is a pretty good game. And
I can tell you that both of them reviewed very well.
Yeah.
They both got the same score.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Both are reviewed in our upcoming March issue.
I don't think he mentioned if he played Mass Effect 1, but I'm sure. I mean, if he's looking,
he did.
Okay.
He did.
Yeah. He should have, if he's looking at even considering Mass Effect 2. But to me, Mass Effect 1 presented such a compelling work of sci-fi fiction that I want to be in that world all over again. Way more than I want to be in Rapture all over again. So I guess that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Well, since he's completed both of them, the added bonus for Mass Effect 2 is he gets to play the same character and experience that universe kind of in a continued way.
Yeah. Right.
It's more connection to the original. And Andy, you do have an excellent point in that Mass Effect was conceived as a multi-part story, mm-hmm. whereas BioShock was a standalone, self-contained story that didn't really have any need to be continued, whereas Mass Effect kind of did. What about you, Prentice? Which way would you throw your gaming money?
I'm ambivalent. I mean, either way, I probably BioShock 2, just I didn't play Mass Effect and have no interest in the second one, so.
Really?
Yeah. But I didn't play the first one, so.
Well, why not?
I didn't get around to it.
Fair enough. All right. So, yeah, that probably didn't help our listener at all. except to say that you know, your money is likely going to be well spent in either case. In fact, almost certainly.
You have good taste in games, we'll say that much.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. All right, that'll do it for questions. What have we been playing? Andy, let's start with you.
I'm happy to report that I played a game of Arma.
Really?
Finally. And I've been meaning to jump on the Arma games that have been Evan's been setting up, like every week or every few days even. It was everything and more that he says it is.
You were with us on Monday, right?
No, I was waiting to get in, but it was too popular. It's become a thing.
It is.
Taking on a life of its own.
But absolutely. I mean, so we just... It's one of those things where I do have one of those, like, wannabe military jargon spewing, like, sides to me, and be, like, in that type of game with other people, and everybody just kind of, you know, it flows back and forth between, like, being funny and then getting super serious. It hits the fan, and everybody's like, oh, like, enemies, like, 6 o'clock, 2 clicks, like, let's go, like, roger that. Team B, like, move around. It's so cool. And then all of a sudden, like, Arma will be funny, and you'll call an airstrike, and the planes will just land on the runway, and everyone will jump in the planes and go and bomb, and then, like, you'll be lazing the target too close, and so I, like, blew up. And so it was, like, hilarious. But it was this really cool mix between super, like, playful military seriousness and then, like, just fun ridiculousness.
So tell us of your exploits. What was there a mission that you ran or what?
Well, we did a bunch of missions, but the one that stood out was a nighttime raid on an airbase where we were supposed to knock out, like, enemy AA emplacements, which, you know, it's just so much cool. Like, oh, they got ZU-125s. Like, everybody's, you know, like, everybody just wants to call out the names of the stuff. It's so fun. And then we had to laze the planes with our laser designators so the airstrikes could come and bomb the planes after we'd taken out the AA. And that was, you know, so it was a really cool mission.
And so in that one, when you die, you respawn, right? But you respawn, like, back at the base?
It depends on the mission.
Yeah, it
sometimes
depends.
You can call in, like, a helicopter of reinforcements, and you'll be put on that. Sometimes you're just out.
Prentice, how about you?
Nothing new. Again, just I played some Arma with him. Team Fortress, same old.
Is Arma everything Evan promises and more?
Yeah, I mean, you have to spend a ridiculous amount of time to get anything back from it, but
I disagree.
Yeah,
I didn't spend that much time in the game. I spent barely enough just to, like, get down all the controls. But then just playing with a group of people, you do probably need to play with a group of people, and we had 12 people.
But did you have any bugs that?
No.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do, and I did. It took me like 20 hours to even get it to run. So,
wow, that's bad.
And Eric, how about you?
Some more Dirt 2. It's a blast. But the biggest game I've been into is a game Evan mentioned probably like 5 or 6 podcasts ago. It's called Dawn of Discovery, and it's odd to describe it. it's a city builder where you've been giving your own fief in this feudal society, and
I've always wanted to fight.
Yeah, pretty much you're just tasked with doing things for your lords, but somehow
such as what type of thing?
Like mapping islands in the ocean or gathering wood and charcoal and making iron. Like it sounds absurd, but there's some little magic in this game that really it makes it feel so rewarding when you've got like all your trade routes running perfectly and your economy is doing awesome and you're building like fountains for your people just so they'll be happy. And it's very relaxing. It can be played literally at your own pace. There's no like time limit or anything. It's a lot of fun. It's a really well-made, fun game.
Okay. I just got the Book of Eli spoiled for me because of a subject line in the email that said, "Andy, you better read this." And then it was an email talking about Gary and the book, and I just got it spoiled.
Who sent that to you?
I don't know. Someone in the Gmail in our account, in the PC Gamer account.
That's not cool.
You baited me. Oh, because it's the... Okay, I know why he said Andy better. Okay.
Did everyone see it?
I saw it.
Yeah, me too.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
I have not either. Me and Josh are planning on going soon.
That's a great twist. Damn it!
Yeah. it's a pretty good twist. I mean, it does require, you know, a little bit of suspension of disbelief, but yeah, I think it works. I was actually very impressed by Book of Eli. So let's see, what have I been playing? I have been back into Torchlight a little bit. Monkey Island. I'm kind of stuck on the last episode of Monkey Island.
Oh, I love the last episode.
Not that I'm butting up against a puzzle, but like I keep playing for like a few minutes at a time and you know, going back to something else. I guess I'm like at the final confrontation with LeChuck right now.
Part did take a little bit of endurance, I guess you could call it.
So, you know, I've you know, been going back and forth with that. I've been playing it with my wife, so, you know, we only play at certain times. I'm, you know, I guess only a few minutes away from finishing now. And, you know, brings a little tear that series won't come back for a while, if at all. Sooner or later.
I think it did really well for Telltale. I'm sure they'll bring a second season in.
I hope it did. It's such a good season.
But they still have to work with LucasArts. You know, LucasArts has to be willing to do it. But, you know, if everybody involved made money, then there will be more. So, I guess I'll be able to talk more about what I've been playing probably next week. All right. So I guess that'll about do it for us this week. In the meantime, you guys can send us some more good questions at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. You can visit our website to subscribe to the magazine at pcgamer.com, or you can visit our Facebook page and become a fan at facebook.com/pcgamermagazine. And we are PC Gamer on Twitter as well. All right. So until next week, we shall see all y'all then.
One thing I am, I'm tolerable.
Yeah, there you go. You're very tolerable, Andy.
Yeah. Describe yourself. Use a word to describe yourself.
Prentice says he logged on, so you should call him in.
Logan's looking at me in a confused way. I think I might have confused him with that transition as well. No, okay. He's just he always looks like that.
That's a wreck. As Gary would say, because he's in the movie business now.
All right.
All right. Good podcast. Thanks, Andy.
Cool.